In this video, I will show you one possible workflow for regression analysis. This workflow will address all the assumptions that are empirically testable after regression analysis. There are, of course, multiple different ways of testing the assumptions, but this is the way I like to do it. I'm using R for this example, but most all of these tests and diagnostics can be done with STATA as well, and most of them can be done with SPSS. Regression analysis workflow and any other statistical analysis workflow first starts by stating a hypothesis that we want to test. Then we collect some data for testing the hypothesis. After that, we explore our data. So it is important to understand the relationships. Then we estimate the first regression model, where we have the independent variables and the dependent variable. Then we check the results briefly to see what they are like, and we proceed with diagnostics. So the diagnostics include various plots, and I prefer plots over statistical tests. The reason is that while you can, for example, do a test for heteroscedasticity, that test will only tell you whether there is a problem or not. It will not tell you the nature of the problem. It is much more informative to look at the actual distribution of the residuals to see what is the heteroscedasticity problem like. And also, if you just look at eyeball these graphs, you will basically identify the same thing that the test tells for you. So I don't generally use tests unless someone asks me to do so. Then when I have done the diagnostics, I figure out what is the biggest problem. And once I have fixed the biggest problem, then I go back to do a regression model. For example, I may identify that there are some nonlinear relationships that I didn't think of in advance, or I may identify some outliers, or I may identify some heteroscedasticity. I go back to fit another regression model where I have fixed the problem, then I do diagnostics again, and once I'm happy, then I conclude that that is my final model after the diagnostics. I do possibly nested model tests against alternative models, and then comes the fun part. I interpret what the regression coefficients mean. So I don't just state that the regression coefficient is 0.02. I tell what it means in my particular research context. And that is the hard part in regression analysis. To demonstrate the regression analysis diagnostics, we need some data. We're going to be using the Prestige dataset again. And our dependent variable is the Prestige this time, and we're going to be using education, income, and share of women as independent variables. So that is a regression model. And the regression estimates are here. We have gone through these estimates before in a previous video, so I will not explain them in detail. Instead, I'm going to be focusing now on the assumptions checking. So how do we know that the six regression assumptions actually hold? The assumptions are shown here. The assumptions are that all relationships are linear, so it's a linear model. Observations are independent. So independence of observation comes from our research design, and in cross-sectional study, it is difficult to test. If you have a longitudinal study, then you can do some checks for independence of observations. No perfect collinearity and non-zero variances of independent variables. That happens if two or more variables perfectly determine one another. So if you have a categorical variable of three categories, then including three dummies leads to this problem, because once you know two dummies, you know the third value. Also, no non-zero variance. If you have zero variance, for example, if you are studying the effects of gender and you have no women in the sample, then you have no variance in gender. So that is another implication, another reason why this could occur. We know that this is not a problem in our data, because if it was a problem, we couldn't even estimate the regression model. Because we got regression estimates, that indicates that we don't have problem with the third assumption. The other assumptions are a bit more problematic because they are about the error term and we can't observe the error term. So the fourth assumption was the error term has expected value of zero given any values of independent variables. Then error term has equal variance. This is the homoscedasticity assumption. And then the error term is normally distributed. How we do test these assumptions about the error term, these three assumptions, is that we use the residuals as estimates of the error term. So if an observation is far from the regression line in the population, it has a large value of the error term, then we can expect that it also has a large residual. So we can use the residuals as estimates of the error terms. So normally doing regression diagnostics is analyzing the residuals. And that's quite natural because if you think that residual is the part of the data that the model doesn't explain, and the idea of diagnostics is that we check if the model explains the data adequately, then it's quite natural to look at the part of the data that the model doesn't explain for clues on what could go wrong. I normally start with the normal QQ plot of the residuals. And the normal QQ plot is something that quantifies whether the regression residuals are normally distributed. So it compares the residuals here, or these are calculated based on standardized residuals. There are different kinds of residuals. For an applied researcher, it doesn't really matter if we know them all. What's important is that your software will calculate the right kind of residual for you automatically when you do these plots. Then you have normal distributions, so you're comparing residuals against normal distribution. We can see here that they roughly correspond. So we have a line here indicates that residuals are normally distributed. Here is a problem. We have a chi-square distributed error term here. So the residuals here are further from mean than they're supposed to be. And here we have inverse, we have uniform distribution of the error term, and that creates this kind of S shape in the normal QQ plot. While the normality of the error term is not an important assumption in regression analysis, I nevertheless do this because it usually it's quick to do and it identifies outliers for me and it gives me kind of like a first look at the data. Here with the actual data, I can see that there are residuals follow normal distribution, so I'm happy with this. This is an indication of a good fitting model on if we think they are the sixth assumption. R labels these possible outliers, so newsboys has a large negative residual, so newsboys is less prestigious than what the model predicts, and farmers are more prestigious what the model predicts. So farmers don't make much money, and you don't need high education to be a farmer, but farmers are still appreciated a lot. So that's an other extreme case. So normal QQ plot shows that the residuals are roughly normally distributed, and that's a good thing. So we conclude no problems. Then we start looking at more complicated plots. The next plot is the residual versus fitted plot. And the idea of residual versus fitted plot is that it allows us to test for nonlinearities and heteroscedasticity in the data. So the fitted value is calculated based on the regression equation. We multiply these variables with the regression coefficients, and then we compare residual versus fitted. Ideally, there is no pattern here. There are residuals and fitted values. They are just spread out. So this is an indication of a well-fitting model in this regard. Here we have a heteroscedasticity problem. So that plot contains data where the variation of the residual and also the variation of the error term is a lot less here in the middle, and then it opens up to the left and to the right. So this is a butterfly shape of residuals, and this is the worst kind of heteroscedasticity problem that you could have. But it's not very, very realistic because it's difficult to figure out, difficult to think what kind of process would generate this kind of data. Then here we have a non-linearity and some heteroscedasticity problem. So this is a megaphone opening right, and it appears that there's slight non-linearity here. We have here severe non-linearity. So the right formula, right shape is not line, but it's a curve here. And this is a weird looking data set that has a non-linearity problem, and also it has a heteroscedasticity problem. So the plot, we want to have something that looks like that, no particular pattern. So typically in these diagnostic plots, you that plot residual against something else, you are looking for a no pattern. Our residual versus fitted plot looks like that. So we have marked again these observations with high residuals in absolute value, and then we can see that we have fitted values. There are very few few professions for which the model predicts high prestigiousness, and most observations are between 30 and 70. So what can we infer from this plot? We can infer that maybe the variance of the estimates decreases slightly to the right. So we don't have much observations here, so we don't know if this is actually the same dispersion here, but we just observe two values from that dispersion. But it is possible that if you look at this dispersion here, it's that much, and we look at this person here, it's slightly less. So it is possible that we have a heteroscedasticity problem. So the fifth assumption does not hold. Whether that is severe enough to warrant using the heteroscedasticity robust standard errors, that is a bit unclear, because this is not a clear clear case of where we should use those. Then we check for outliers. So this far we have been looking for evidence for heteroscedasticity and nonlinearity. We have found evidence for heteroscedasticity, but not really for nonlinearities. Then we are looking for outliers as the final step, using the fourth plot. And the residual versus leverage plot tells us which observations are influential. So we are looking here at observations that have a high leverage and high residual. So we have general managers who have high leverage and a high residual in absolute value. So we want to look for observations with residuals that are large in absolute value, absolute magnitude. In Stata, for example, Stata uses the squared residual here because that always goes up, so it's easier to see which observations have large residuals. So we have to look at small negative values or large positive values here. So it's not as simple as if this was square of the residual. So minister has leverage, newsboys has a large residual, and then general managers is here. The Cook's distance is another measure of influence, and observations with large Cook's distance are potential outliers. As before, in the Deep House paper, to deal with these outliers, we would be looking at why the prestigiousness of one occupation would be different than others. So for example, general managers they earn a lot of money, so their salaries are high, and therefore their predicted prestigiousness should be high as well, because it depends on the income, and they earn less than what the model predicts, which means that the model over-predicts their prestigiousness because of the high income. So that could be one reason why we could drop general managers. But you have to use your own judgment, because this is only 102 observations, so dropping one observation increases our sample size by 1% approximately. So that's that could be consequential. So we have the leverage is the distance from the mass center of the data, conceptually, and Cook's distance is another measure of influence. So we identify outliers using this plot. Then we start looking at the final plot, which is the added variable plot. So added variable plot quantifies the relationship between a dependent variable and one independent variable at a time. And this plot is interesting. It tells us it plots education, that is the focal independent variable, regressed on the other independent variables here, the others, and it takes the residual. So this is the part of the of education that is not explained by income or share of women. So that's if you think about the Venn diagram presentation of regression analysis, this is the part of the education that does not overlap with any of the other independent variables. Then we have prestige, the regression of prestige on other independent variables, and we take the residual. So we take what is unique of prestige and unique of education after parceling out the influence of all other variables in the model. And then we draw a line through that data. And this is actually the regression line of education, of prestige on education. So this one way to calculate regression line is to regress both variables, independent and dependent, on all other independent variables, and then run a regression analysis using just one independent variable. It produces you the exact same result as would producing, including this education with all of the other variables directly in multiple regression analysis. This plot allows us to look for nonlinearities and heteroscedasticity in a more refined manner. So what we can identify from here is that the effects of income look pretty weird. We want to have observations that are banded as a band around the regression line. And here we can see that it looks more like a bit of a curve. So it goes up here and then flattens out a bit. And we also have much more dispersion here than dispersion here. Now we have done the diagnostics. So we did the normal QQ plot, then we did the residual versus fitted plot, we did the influence plot or the outlier plot, and added variable plot. And now we have to decide what do we want to do with the model. And some ideas that we could try is to use heteroscedasticity robust standard errors. Our sample size is so small, and there is no clear evidence of a serious heteroscedasticity problem. So in this case, I would probably use the normal conventional standard errors. Consider dropping general managers and see if the results change. Even if we decide to keep general managers in our sample, that could work as a robustness check in the paper. So in the Deep House's paper, they estimated the same model with the one outlier observation and without the outlier, and then compared the results. And we should consider log transformation of income. Considering income in relative terms makes a lot more sense anyway, because when you think of races, for example, or you want to switch to a new job, then you typically want to negotiate a salary increase relative to your current level. Also, additional salary, how much it increases your quality of life, depends on the current salary level. So if you give 1,000 euros to somebody who makes 1,000 euros per month, that's a big difference. If you give 1,000 euros to somebody who makes 5,000 euros a month, it's a smaller difference. So income, company revenues, that kind of quantities, we typically want to consider in relative terms. And to do that, we use the log transformation.